some of them literally say, Kathleen, I'm okay making the exact same money. I'm okay even making a little bit less money, but I need a life back or I have to leave this business. Like, it's completely taken over my life. I've got kids. I'm not seeing them. My marriage is on the rocks. Like, it was serious things that they're coming with.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links, and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement Elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today, my guest is one of Canada's and North America's leading real estate coaches, trainers, and author of the book, The Top 1% Life. Welcome to the show, Kathleen Black.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're very excited because I think you're the first Canadian that we've ever had on the show. So tell us a bit about real estate in Canada first up.
Well, I work with a lot of teams and top producers. So real estate in Canada is very busy. In Toronto, for example, we have the largest real estate board in North America. We have just under 60,000 agents for that one kind of big city. So there's a lot of competition there. So it's extremely busy. And we have a mix. Like, Canada is a big country, big provinces. So we have some cities in very, very strong sellers markets and other cities in strong buyers markets. So it's definitely a mix, but we work with the top 1% and they're kind of busy, you know, regardless of the market, which is great.
Yeah. It sounds very much like Australia. I think Australia and Canada are very similar in land mass and different regions and things like that. So we've got a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
So you started your career as a RE/MAX agent back in 2008, which was a while ago. Can you tell us about how you got into real estate? Did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
Great question. Real estate definitely chose me, that and some friends and family giving me a little bit of a push.
Yeah.
I got into it from an investment background. I was purchasing properties with my ex-husband and we were essentially gutting them completely, you know, to the point it was just like a shell and creating it multi-units. And we had a really hard time connecting with real estate agents who understood how to assess the properties and how to pick ones that would be a great investment. So I didn't really get into real estate thinking I would be actively helping other people buy and sell. But that's certainly what I did very quickly in the first year. So it was more, you know, I had two little kids and like anybody who's, well, maybe not like anybody like us, we had a lot of sweat equity and I was kind of showing units and leasing them and, you know, painting and sanding and two kids in tow. And I kind of thought, I don't need another job to do. So it was with a lot of push that I got my real estate license, but obviously it was meant to be and got really busy within the first year selling. So I didn't end up to be as focused on our portfolio whatsoever.
Interesting. So what you're describing there is like a lot of real estate agents, they become renovators, they become cleaners, they become painters, like, you know, all at once, which is a lot of people don't realize how much it goes into getting a property ready for sale. I often ask coaches as well, like, do you remember your first sale and how did you get the listing?
I sold 47 homes my first year in real estate. And I'm looking back, I remember some of my initial clients because I remember lessons, you know, and learning painful lessons of wasting time with things that I, you know, later on I wouldn't with systems. And I remember my first listing presentation, but I do not remember my first sale, which is kind of unbelievable looking back now.
Your first listing presentation, were you nervous?
I was a little bit. I mean, I was always systems driven. So, I mean, I had a process that I kind of practiced and went through, but I was a little bit nervous. And ironically, the people I met with kind of said to me at the time that they had had the house that they were looking to sell listed. It did not sell. And they had worked with somebody they found to be quite aggressive. And it was interesting that they actually said, you know, we had a feeling you were a bit newer in the industry, but we actually really liked that about you. And we liked that you seemed to be really focused on us and you just weren't. So many people came through our door were really pushy in their opinion, right? So ironically, it led to a positive result. But yeah, I remember being nervous for sure.
I think that's something that, you know, even as a new person, you tend to be more focused on the person rather than something that you've done a million times, and that can be an advantage too. Like you said, you sold 49 homes in your first year, which is a lot for a rookie. And then you were quickly recognized in the top 1% of realtors in Toronto. Was that a goal that you set for yourself in the very beginning?
No, not at all. I think it was twofold. I mean, I have a task-oriented personality. So for me, systems and kind of, I like to do well with what I do. So I always measured what I was doing, but it also was coupled with some urgency because I went through a separation within the first couple of months of getting into the business. And all of a sudden I was the breadwinner and I wasn't before. And it was kind of, you know, no choice. So I mentally made a decision and said, guess what? You know, I'm going to do well at real estate and this is going to work. And I had an envelope with, you know, trade back then where you got checks, obviously, but an envelope with multiple trade checks, just, you know, being a young mom and on my own and kind of in a new industry, just to give me security of everything's fine. So I didn't set out to originally want to sell a lot of real estate. I wanted to do it for investment. But when I went, I ended up to go to a team actually, which gave me a huge amount of extra perspective for what I do now. But at the time I interviewed, you know, multiple brokerages, multiple teams, other people wanted to partner up. And in the end, I went with the team I did because my goal was to do the equivalent of what a typical agent does in 10 years in my first year in the business. And I believed at that particular team that they would give me enough opportunities. And if I worked hard and, you know, kind of mastered what I was doing, I truly believed I could do it. So in the end, I did do that. Everybody I got into real estate with, like at the exact same time, pretty much. I don't think any of them have their licenses anymore. And I got busy very, very quickly. So the experience was invaluable.
So you're a young mom, single mom with two young kids, and we know that real estate can consume you if you let it. So how did you balance being a mom with a growing, budding career?
It's a great question. I mean, I always say in coaching that I, and in life, like I don't personally believe in balance. I don't think it's that attainable. You know, I believe in harmony. There were time periods where I took, you know, extra weeks off to have holidays with my kids, or I took them away, or I was off, you know, for the whole week, like extra long weekends with them, things like that. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis, would I say it was 100% balanced? No, I don't think so. I mean, I strategically set up to have my kids in school very close to where I could drop off and have extra childcare very like right across the street. And then I moved back into the school district, literally across the street from the school and beside the childcare. So I set up to give myself a lot of advantages and make it easier, but I was really careful with my time. You know, I blocked my schedule. I pre-booked buyers in always. I always had them knowing their next step and where we're going, which created a lot of confidence for them, but it also allowed me to have more control over my schedule. And as the market picked up a little bit more, hey, I had to be a little bit more reactionary, but in a more mixed market buyer's market, it was a lot easier to pre-book. Like my clients were just used to pre-booking with me all the time. And I, at the end, the last year selling full-time, I think I was up to the point where I worked a partial day one day on the weekend and I worked two evenings a week and the rest was all during the weekday when my kids were at school. So it certainly was the systematic approach of being really efficient with my time.
Yeah, so it's doable if you set yourself up well and you've got good systems.
And if you learn how to give options instead of saying no and not saying yes to, I think if you say yes to everything all the time, your clients aren't necessarily more happy and they don't get to a quicker outcome and you do less with your time. And I think it's easy to believe we have to say yes in real estate, you know, the minute we're asked to jump. But I don't think, you know, the busiest agents aren't able to do that all the time. And that's, you know, how they do more business.
Yeah. And I think these days too, people really understand family too. Like, I mean, I've got a daughter and I used to say, look, I'd love to meet with you this afternoon, but my daughter's got something on at school, which is really important. Do you mind if we reschedule? And nobody will ever deny a school concert, I don't think.
It's interesting, like across North America, some, like if you're working with buyers, for example, obviously listings most of the time are exclusive. I mean, I did some work in Manhattan and New York and they have much more of an open market. It's much less exclusive, but for a lot of North America, they don't get their buyers under representation or an exclusivity agreement. It's here nor there, but we find that there's so many options and there's so many agents and there's such a practice of kind of like instant gratification. Like there's not a lot of understanding for a lot of our top agents with that, to the point where we'll say, you know, we're booked. Like I would just say, absolutely, I'm booked between this time and this time, but you know, I do have 5 o'clock available. I did have a client cancel at that time, which you know, I love hearing you say that, that people are understanding of family. I wish I could say the same with our experience here, but I haven't found it as much, unfortunately.
I reckon that's a good approach, though, the one that you've just said, which is, you know, I'm booked at this time, but I've got this time. In some ways, nobody really needs to know what you're doing either. So, you know, I think depending on who your person is that you're dealing with, I think both work.
Oh, for sure.
So you made the leap into coaching. Tell me a bit about that. Why did you change from being a top producer to being a coach?
The first kind of couple of weeks in the business, we were working on, you know, creating language, you know, best way to communicate, like a reminder call for a seller consultation or buyer consultation. And I came from a psychology background and I worked at dental offices, ironically, and I would help people set up schedules and retain the schedules and, you know, call for reminder calls. Like it was very systematic how we ran our schedules and whatnot. And bringing that into real estate, I saw quite a parallel. The team I was working with ended up to create the first team-specific coaching company in Canada. Within about 18 months, their director of coaching had been let go. The three owners just weren't getting along. You know, it's like real estate teams, coaching companies, restaurants, very similar in success rates. They're not fantastic. So the two other owners wanted to go in different directions. I was offered director of coaching opportunity, took it, and it ended up that I became director of operations. And I kind of just had this notion. I was already running the company. And I said, you know, like, I really believe in this company. I love what we do. I love top performance optimization. I'm working with elite performers. I mean, it was just such a, to me, it was a gift. I was so ecstatic to do it. And I set goals to move into coaching full time relatively quickly. And what ended up to happen was I was just listening to a lot of Think and Grow Rich and positive mindset. And I kind of went, I'm running this company, you know, on my own. I think I better have some ownership in this company, or maybe I should go in a different direction, because I was taking a little bit of a hit compared to what I made in sales to run the coaching company. So I said, hey, you know what? I'll continue to run it. I want 50% of ownership, which, looking back, I don't know where the audacity came from, but it came and obviously was meant to be. And they ended up to say yes and open the books and realize the company was just under $190,000 in debt. And in Canada, when you have certain types of debt, regardless of if you're incorporated, you can go bankrupt. They don't go away. Like you still owe, you know, taxes or employee deductions, things like that to the bank. So I look back and I say, you know, it was a fire sale that got me truly into running a coaching company. Took us a couple of years. I did clear all the debt, got us into the black. And basically when it was time to say, hey, Kathleen, now you're going to make what we agreed on, I had full decision-making. My silent partner became not as silent, wanted to go in a different direction. But what a great opportunity. Because I'll say this, I mean, for me, I believe in cash flow and creating value in the market. I probably get that from real estate. You know, if what you have is valuable, go out there, make money with it. I didn't believe in, you know, getting investors or giving away any of my ownership. So starting a business from scratch without debt felt like flying compared to trying to get a company that's relatively small out of what felt like an immense amount of debt at the time. So my company now has been just over 4 years. We're going to be coming on 4.5 years, but the first year coming out of the prior company, we did 38% more sales than the other one ever did. Second year, 68% more sales. So I think it's one of those things all entrepreneurs go through, you know, like facing the dark days of, oh my gosh, is it all gone? And no, it's just a phoenix moment of have faith and rebuild stronger. And it was obviously meant to be.
Yeah, real estate is a good grounding for that too.
It is.
So in your coaching company, what are the big problems that agents come to you with generally?
It's one of two things. Like over the years, our niche is definitely team. So originally people came to us because they had lots of business, right? They were making great money. They were doing lots of sales. They didn't have time and they didn't have quality of life. Even if they had time, they were, you know, on their phone, they were distracted. It was really difficult for them to have the life they envisioned. And what I found as I coached people over the years was the same thing they were saying. Like some of them literally say, Kathleen, I'm okay making the exact same money. I'm okay even making a little bit less money, but I need a life back or I have to leave this business. Like it's completely taken over my life. I've got kids. I'm not seeing them. My marriage is on the rocks. Like it was serious things that they're coming with. Essentially, so they come to us to try to get help they can rely on. They come to get systems so that they can have an organized expansion. A lot of real estate teams, you know, are not successful. A lot of the partnerships are not successful. They're pairing with the wrong people or they don't have an organized way to bring people on or to train them. And that's extremely difficult. So they're looking to us for all the business systems to expand. And they're looking for essentially, you know, like to have the ultimate in success and the ultimate in freedom, we need a world-class team, but we also need a best-in-class practice that takes you from A to Z and in order, or A to Z and in order. And that's really difficult to find. You know, I find in real estate, like we have amazing value like this, right? Somebody can listen to this and they can get information. We can go online and get so much, but having a cohesive roadmap of, okay, this is how you take your individual business as a top producer, and this is how you expand it and you go 10 times bigger or 20 times bigger. That's really difficult to find, or to transition your mindset into what you have to do to build that, because real estate's so fast, right? And building out your real estate team can feel slow. It can feel like it's lacking that like big, you know, dopamine release of like instant gratification of the sale. And it takes a lot of faith. So people are coming to us either for more time. And now in the past couple of years, we have just as many individual agents who are saying, I don't want a team, but I want efficiency. I want to make more money with what we have. So we actually bring team systems into individual businesses without them expanding, so they have the options later.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you've just touched on a few of the really sort of, you know, thorny problems in the industry. One being agents thinking to themselves, look, I know I've got to take on an assistant, or I know I've got to get help, but I'm too scared to, because then I'm responsible for them as well as me. What would you say to an agent who is in that position right now? When is the best time to take on a person?
So I have two answers for it. I mean, I'd say first, when is not the best time? When is not the best time is when you're so swamped, you're running in every single direction and it's chaos and it's firefighting, because that almost never works because we're under urgency and we're just, you know, we're not aware of what to look for, let alone have the time to train somebody. The other time that doesn't work is kind of when does work, is that if you don't have enough opportunities to replace that time that the administrator is going to do for you with valuable face-to-face sales opportunities, then you're probably in a scary situation. I think a lot of people think you can bring on, you know, administrator to support and you're going to get a big pay cut. In our experience, that's not the case at all. In fact, many top producers are actually giving themselves a demotion by not bringing on administrative help, because the price on the market for that help per hour, as we know, is far less than agents typically would make for their equivalent of face-to-face time. So essentially, as soon as you're at a place where you know you're letting leads drop, you're referring leads out to other agents, you're not calling people back, you're not doing follow-up, which is a huge one. They're like, I'm just dealing with the now business, like follow-up, I'm not even touching that. When you start to get to those places, then you know you're already losing money. And it's okay, how can I bring this person on, but have a strategy on how to hire, what systems to have them up and running? Like, we have a phenomenal amount of agents now who work with us for our hiring process, but then they have us train their admin beyond the call. The admin sets up the systems. They know what they're doing. They have operations manuals for it, because to hire and train and create your systems at once, like, that's chaos. It's going to feel like a huge burden. And it just seems so easy, right? I'll just get an admin. They'll just help me. It'll be fine. But when you're running, it's hard to even know what to ask them to do.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, like I can relate to that through our own business. You know, like when we take on a person, sometimes I feel like I'm so busy with editorial deadlines and things like that, that, you know, training another person seems too much. So what you're saying makes absolute sense. I think the other thing that you just touched on a minute ago was that real estate agents are often busy being busy. And you'll talk to some real estate agents and they'll say, I'm just so busy. And I guess that leads me to my next question about your book, The Top 1% Life. So can you tell me a little bit about the book and how you can sort of break the busy cycle?
The book comes out of the experience of ironically being successful, but not necessarily in the right way. And I'll explain what that means. I mean, it over the years, we've worked with, you know, a phenomenal amount of real estate agents to go from, again, being top producers, some of them not even yet. Like one example, they were at 27 resale homes and they went up to 550 units per year. I mean, that's a massive increase. And they did that within 4 years of working with us, maybe even 3.5. So that was huge. But the reality was, for a lot of the people we were working with, I mean, they were setting these targets of saying, I really want to make X amount of money, or I really want to do this many units, you know, with the team as they start to grow. And it's kind of like, well, why do you want to do that? You know, I want to be able to travel, or I always had this dream to like go on whatever it is, a bucket list hike, or to have a recreational property or whatever, or have money, you know, set aside for my children, whatever it was for them. And we started to see this pattern of people shooting for these top 1% businesses, getting there, but not doing any of the things that they dreamed about when they're making far, far more than they needed to make. And they were in this cycle of even agents on teams, I noticed, were saying, but Kathleen, I'm too busy. So I started to say to them, you know what? When was the last time you weren't busy? And it was amazing to watch them go back, like, and have people say to me, I don't know. Like, I had one person say, like, 25 years. I've been in the business 25 years. And she at some point sold over 100 homes a year on her own. She averaged 80 to 90 every single year. She's now in a team. She's like, I've been busy for 25 years. I'm like, when do you think next not going to be busy? It's like, oh, I'm like, so when is a good time, you know, to do these things that you got in the business for in the first place? So top 1% life is that switch of saying, we have to stop shooting for these, I believe, in real estate, for these top 1% businesses that can end up to feel like a trap, and they can feel really heavy because you have to hold and maintain them. But if we shoot for what is my personal definition of a top 1% life, and it's going to change, we're going to evolve. But right now, like, what does that look like? You know, how often am I working? What are my strengths? Where am I going to thrive? Where do I feel like I'm serving my community and my industry? Paint that picture. We can reach and now build businesses that take them there. The business will get to top 1% even easier now, but now they're at a place where they actually have fulfillment. So that's where the book came from. And we noticed, like, I did 2 years of Live Well Your Live tour, which was my practice what you preach. You know, I did the Camino part of it, the Camino de Santiago. I did, went and hiked around Italy and went back and did it again and just kind of did a whole bunch of things that I've been putting off, saying, hey, like, I've got to walk the walk. And what I found was my business grew, and all of the agents who started, it's not all travel. Some things were just like, take a Sunday morning off every week. You have permission. You're selling 90 homes a year. Like, if you want to take Sunday off, yeah, take Sunday off, right? So it was just little things, but it powered us up and our businesses grew, or they became more efficient and more joyful, which is great. So the book is the journey to go from that overworked underachiever in relative, you know, some of our overworked underachievers are still our top earners in the industry, but they're not where they want to be and they're not doing it efficiently and they're not happy and their health compromises, their mental health. We just say, you know, everybody wants to live longer. Like, I want to live to be, you know, my magic age, I say, is 186. So I keep going. But the reality is, I always say to people, but do you want to do it if your brain isn't working? Do you want to do it if your body's breaking down and stress is so heavy on us? So the book is that journey of the ultimate expansion strategy that we've worked with to take people from what I believe is the biggest trap, which is the GCI mindset of seeing everything as, you know, I made X amount for selling that house. Well, we have to switch that to, you have a business and your business has expenses, and regardless of what you're getting an award for, there's an amount you're taking home. And what percentage of that should be to help you leverage? What percentage should be to go back into marketing and invest? A lot of individual agents aren't even investing enough back into their business to have a chance at expanding the way they want to. And I find once I can get their mind switching from GCI mindset to business owner mindset, I have a lot more room to work with things because now we're open to, you know, leverage and expanding beyond our ego. I don't have to be all things anymore, which is kind of beautiful in real estate, which is, can be super competitive now, right?
Yeah. The sound you just heard then was a million sort of people like clicking to sort of work out where they could get this book, The 1% Mindset. Cause I think, and we'll leave some links in the show notes, but I think what you're describing there is a big problem that we have here too, is that, you know, that GCI mindset is a big movement to try and change that into revenue and profit are two completely different things. It's great that the book actually switches your thinking from one to the other. If I came to you right now, Kathleen, and said, okay, I'm doing 100 homes a year, I'm working 18 hours a day, I am at my wit's end, what are two or three things that you would tell me that would help me to break that cycle now?
Well, again, I would go back to, for us, we do something called Letter from the Future. So I'd want to set your mindset on where you want to go. So I'd first of all give you a compelling future, just like our buyers and sellers, we need compelling futures too. So, you know, 1 year from now, looking back, what does your life look like? What does your business look like? What have you achieved? What type of help do you have? Because a lot of us, like, all of us, we're humans and our conscious mind is not running the show. We do a lot of training on mindset because what we'll find is our conscious mind is the goal setter. So I'm saying, hey, I want to work less and I want to have this balance and I want to have harmony. But our unconscious mind is the goal getter and it's telling us our values. It's also telling us our insecurities. And if our insecurities are, you know, I want to be enough or I'm scared that I could lose the business or I'm not in that optimal mindset, I'm probably going to sabotage any changes I need to make in my business. So we work really hard to align. You know, what am I saying with what am I thinking and what am I doing? And the best way to do that is with a compelling future that's, you know, vision based, because our unconscious mind loves pictures and symbols. And, you know, that visualization is so very powerful. So we want to always start there. So I would say, start with that. Just let yourself dream. You know, it sounds unreal, but we've done this process to support thousands of agents. Some wanted teams, some didn't. But the number who had said to me that said, I don't really ask myself how I want to feel. I don't really dream about my optimal. And they'll start to go, but my kids have piano this day and I'm locked into this and I'm locked into this. It's like magic wand time. 1 year from now, what does it look like? Like, how would you build it? So I want that excitement and passion to come back if they're missing it, so they get excited about where they're going, because it's going to take some changes. So that would be one thing. The other thing that I would have them do is get in tune with what their personal genius is, because usually if we're lucky in real estate, our personal genius is driving the business. It is driving the most value-rich activities we're doing in our business. But the difficulty is most agents don't know what theirs are, because they're so used to, I just have to do all of these things. So what is it that energizes you, that you love, that if you did it, you know, 100% of the time, you'd be making more money? What if we could get you doing it 80% of the time? That allows us now to leverage to somebody else who's great at what we're not great at without feeling like there's a loss in the business. And it gives us instant energy, because those things are weighing us down. Right? Let's say if you have 100 pennies a day that represent your energy, I mean, it could be a little thing like writing the write-up for a listing property. But if I'm horrible at it and I keep putting it off, I mean, it could be costing me 40 pennies of energy a day when it costs somebody else 2 or 10, right? Depending. So what things can I focus on? So I'd have them do those two things first, and then I'd have an agreement on when can they say yes and why. So what do we need to have in place where you confidently are taking an educated risk to invest in your business, putting this person in place, and not feeling like you're risking in a negative way or you're exposing yourself? I find like it's really important that we know when we've prepared and when it's okay to say yes and when we're doing the right thing, and set clear expectations of your first hire might not be your forever hire. Like, we get better at knowing ourselves and knowing who we attract into the business the stronger we get. So, you know, giving ourselves a break too of saying, hey, if we have these things in place, this is the best we can do for this round. You know, if we make a mistake, our most dangerous thing is to be passive and let it keep going. If we make a mistake, we'll make choices or we'll make changes, right? Like, that's it. And if we have to let somebody go, we let somebody go. At the end of the day, we have control over what we allow in our business.
Yeah, something that I think you're describing there, which happens here a lot, is top producing agents look for a mini me. They'll go out and they'll put an ad in the paper for an assistant, and the first person that they'll like will be an absolute carbon copy of themselves. Then they get together in this team and it doesn't work, because you can't, you know, well, let me use a football analogy. I don't think you can have a team of quarterbacks. You need a fullback and you need someone throwing from the sidelines and people that can do different things. How do you as an agent avoid falling into the trap of just hiring the wrong person?
Yeah, great question. And I find the same, like, one of the biggest reasons a lot of partnerships don't work is you partner up with somebody, like you said, they're either a mini me or they're exactly like me. And we end up trading time off, which, if that's what you want, that's okay. But that's often not going to expand your business. If anything, it brings it down a little bit, because two people almost become one. It's kind of like if you're a really strong listing agent and you know you never really want to have a bigger team, you just want to do the odd buyer deal, but you want to be mainly listing focused, that bringing on a mini me who's licensed, who can still complement your weaknesses, but is more like your style, that might allow you to expand quite a bit. Like, people can double their listing sales in a year or within a couple of years with a really strong license, like client care, licensed assistant with them. But later on, if you want to have a team, it will cap you. So for us, we use a system. And I think system's such a overused word in many industries, in real estate for sure. I mean, what is a system? It's a proven process where you know what to look for, you know what to say, you know your most desirable outcome. So some parts of our system are, you know, the types of ads we write and how we're writing them and understanding who we're attracting. It's, you know, having them do different inventories like math tests, personality profile, phone interview, in-person interview. And we have the ideal profiles for each role within a real estate team. And we explain why they're that profile, because we actually find a lot of high driver real estate agents will literally bulldoze over their ideal support person's profile because they don't understand it. So they don't think that they're a good match, when really they're exactly what they need because they're great at the parts of the business that the driver is not. So we prep them on all of that in advance so that they can actually have an understanding of, wait, yeah, this person is not going to think like me or approach like me. So how can I communicate? How can I set them up for success? And when do I have to protect myself from sabotaging somebody who could be a great fit, which, you know, we can all do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The other question is top producers, let's say I've been an agent, I'm selling 100 homes a year. And now I've decided I want to open my own brokerage or my own office because I'm a top producer. So now's the time. I don't want to work for someone else. What are the big problems that you see in Canada with that sort of thinking? Like, because what we find in Australia is that often the big salespeople aren't the best leaders.
It's an important question. And I think, you know, we have clients all across North America. And I think sometimes because we deal with teams, there's this mindset that perhaps we encourage teams to go on their own because they are set up and they can so easily leave and set up shop on their own. But the reality is the success of teams is by hyper-focusing on what we do best, which is, you know, creating the opportunities, servicing the opportunities, and then retaining them in our community. We do that best. Most teams are not, you know, the 100% best at like the regulatory sides of it and, you know, adhering to any complaints or licensing bodies. Not that they're going against it. It's just not their focus. So like the brokerage or the brand that they're under often does key parts of the business that in our experience, most of the teams don't want to do. There are some teams that are very entrepreneurial. You know, their leaders have multiple businesses. And in the end, they end up to go on their own for other reasons. But the majority of our people don't leave big brands out of strategy. They leave it because they become capped. So I think there's this idea that, you know, the team gets big enough and it's just the natural next step. Sure, for your high visualizing drivers, they're always going to look for the next step to grow. They're just wired that way. But the majority of people are saying, wait a minute, I've got problems with office space or signage or the fee arrangement isn't allowing me to grow anymore. And most of our teams really try to negotiate to stay under their brand platforms. But sometimes it's just to the point where literally it's they have to pick the team growth or the brand. And when you put somebody who's successful in that position in a corner, it's only so long until they're going to go, well, I can't stand still. From our experience, it's more problems that kind of force them out the door. And I'm sure there's perspective on both sides. I just work with teams. But yeah, the more we can stay focused on what we do best and stay laser focused at the simple key elements for each role, the better we do.
So if you ended up out on your own, if you decided to go it alone, is it better then to find someone if you're not particularly good at running a business to find someone that's their core skill?
The core roles for, you know, franchise concept are really important in a real estate team. You know, if you have a driver, you need that manager archetype and you need your operators, or, you know, in the sports team, you need your people on the field, you need your coaches and your analysts on the side, and you need your owners at the top saying, hey, is this profitable? Like, we want you to win because we need to be a profitable business. And for a lot of our team leaders, they need to be all three. Like, I'm always really open with our network that, you know, we built our business up to a point where I was always with the coaches, with the sales team, with our whole team managing it. And I was good at it for a long time. And then the business came to a point where all of a sudden my other skills outweighed the management side of it. And even though I have a lot of detail-oriented facets in my personality, it just became painful. And it's not that I didn't love the people I did. It was that the business came to a place where I was no longer the ideal manager and I would have held the business back. So we have other manager archetypes. Basically, I always joke my left arm and my right arm are two different manager archetypes who are so, so strong. And then I drive out the vision, but the company would be capped without it. And I say that with our network a lot to kind of give permission that, you know, I could say, oh, I need to be all these things, but eventually it hurts us to try to do that. I do think you need the manager side so you can do what you love as a visionary or a driver. And if you're a manager, then hey, bring in somebody who's going to help drive you forward. We need all perspectives.
In leadership, what are the top three qualities that you feel are necessary to run a successful team?
That's a great question. And I think your question before kind of alludes, like, the beautiful part that I love most about team is that we don't live in competition and comparison. We live in, again, genius. Like, this is what you do amazing. And my job is to acknowledge that and acknowledge we might do it a little bit differently, but end of the day, like, you're the best person with the right perspective to get us, you know, results in marketing. Whereas I might be the best person with the right perspective on the ground with, you know, listings or sellers. And the reason I bring this up is that I think sometimes there's this idea that team leaders who are successful are of a certain cloth, right? And the reality is it's more about awareness and being very conscious as a person and saying, this is who I am. I know that maybe perhaps, you know, our more steady, consistent personalities as team leaders, I've had them literally say, Kathleen, I'm not the right personality for a team leader. Like, I don't think I can build it. They're going to walk all over me. But the reality was they were aware of their personality. So when a typical, you know, very steady, consistent personality might have held back, they said, I know I'm doing this because this is my personality. I know I need the perspective of someone who's a driver so that I can bring that into my business. So I think anyone who's conscious of their strengths and weaknesses, who has the right accountability and support, can build a business, but they have to be committed and be all in. Because the truth is, I find most people use their personalities, or they find any excuse to say why they can't build what they potentially could, which just means it's not for them. End of the day, if you have the willpower, you're willing to resource a proven system, and you're willing to be conscious about what you're good at and what you're not good at, and lean into risk in an educated way, I believe you have a chance to build a successful team. But it's a journey.
Yeah. And so it sounds a lot like self-awareness. You really need to be self-aware of where you're strong and where you're not so strong, and then also put the ego aside to be able to say, well, I'm not strong here. Let's bolster that part of the team.
Well, sure. Because if I have blind spots, which like expressive people have the biggest blind spots, right? We're so busy trying to push our message out and what we want to create, we're not getting as much feedback. And you want to have mirrors, like a team is going to just keep pushing at your blind spots until you accept them and kind of work around them. And there's many team leaders like a revolving door because they don't see it, right? They want everyone to be like them and they're frustrated and the people don't feel valued. And it's, yeah, I say, you know, I think building a business is the best personal development program that's out there. Yep. Because yeah.
Going to business for yourself is like a straight MBA for sure. For sure. Just a couple more questions. So you've mentioned drivers a few times and expressives. You're talking about the DISC model there, aren't you? Where people, where you can actually sort of peg your personality to a particular type.
Yeah, I'm a trainer's trainer in DISC. So we certify a lot of our team leaders, you know, to use it. All of our coaches go through training for that. And we find it really helpful in hiring recruitment. Also, we integrate it in all of our sales systems. So how we help buyers and sellers is fully integrated in DISC. All of our presentations are built to communicate with all the DISC personalities, but also the NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, the learning styles. So we've taken basically what I find to be highly resourceful information and integrate it with real estate, so that a real estate agent doesn't have to go and do, you know, the whatever it is at this point, like 180 hours I've invested in NLP. Well, you know, they benefit directly, maybe 10% of that, you know, face to face with clients. So we bring that into our systems to help. But yeah, it's DISC personality profiling.
Yeah, that's really clever. Kathleen, thank you so much for sharing some of your wisdom on teams and your experiences in real estate with us this morning. We super appreciate it. If there was one thing that you would like people to remember from listening to this show, what would it be?
That you can build your best life. And I mean, I think, you know, it might be a cliche, it might be a hashtag, but I work with people every single day who build phenomenal businesses because they're willing to do what it takes when others won't. It's more a matter of how you show up. And I think it's 100% possible to do that if you're willing to lean all the way in.
Yeah, absolutely. Kathleen Black, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.